All lines are bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Health IT for the Care Continuum Task Force under the HITECH. We will call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Chris Lehman.
Good morning.
Erin Mary. That's it. Steve Waldron. Chip Hart. Sue Cressley.
Present.
Great. Hopefully the others will join us soon. I will now.
Sorry, this is Chip. I'm here. Sorry, I was on mute.
That's okay. Good morning. Okay, I'll turn it over to our co-chairs, Chris and Carolyn. Thank you.
Good morning. It's great to see everyone again bright and early this Friday morning. I hope you've had a good week and are ready to get started on the next segment of our review. Today, we will be trying to get through recommendations 7 through 10 to finish up that part of our work. And I will pass the mic on to Chris for any comments he has.
Yeah, good morning. When I was getting ready to get on this phone call, I was thinking this is turning into a full-time job as we had an opportunity to present your work from the last two phone calls to the larger HITECH group this week. And Carolyn will give us a little bit of a flavor of how that went. But just to sum my impression up, we were able to present, your hard work on the last two calls, and I think it was perceived rather well. But that's just my impression on the phone. So I'll give it back to Carolyn, who was in the room.
Yes, thanks, Chris. On Tuesday, the day when we had our meeting related to the NPRM work that the task force is doing across all the different initiatives that are a part of the NPRM, Chris and I had about 45 minutes to present to the full HITECH. So we reviewed the charge and the scope of our work and indicated that we had a tentative consensus about recommendations 7 to 10, but that we would be reporting back in more detail on that in the future, which will be at the April 10 meeting of the HITECH. And then at that point, Chris reviewed our recommendations and our discussions related to the first six recommendations. After that, we had a brief discussion with members, the primary considerations being how this is going to be different from other specialty EHR or other special situation reviews. And we discussed the fact that actually it may have quite a number of similarities with other kinds of EHRs that relate to special situations, like dental EHRs, for example, and indicated that our process may serve as a model for what other committees will wish to do in the future as they look at other special situations. But on the whole, we didn't have anything that I would characterize as pushback per se. It was really more informational and questions in getting the group up to speed in terms of what we are doing and the details of our work to date. So I think Chris and I both felt quite good about it when it was over, and the indications we have from our colleagues at ONC were positive as well. So I think we're on the right track, and things are looking really good for us. Did you have any thoughts, Chris, from your discussion with the members?
No, I think you summed it quite nicely. I had a little bit that day outside discussion with other stakeholders in pediatric safety convened by the Pew Trust, and there was a general consensus that these recommendations were generally in the right ballpark.
Good, good. That's really good to hear. So I think does anyone have any follow-up questions or discussion about our presentation at HITECH this week?
Nope.
Well, seeing that we don't have anything to take care of today regarding the first six recommendations, I'll pass the mic to Chris to get started with recommendation number 7.
All right, let's get to work. We have four more recommendations to go. The next one is recommendation 7, transferable access authority. The description is that the system shall provide a mechanism to enable access control that allows a transferable access authority, for example, to address change in guardian, child reaching age of maturity, etc. So let me stop here and see if there are any comments, any concerns about implementing this. My general perception of this is for the most part already implemented in existing EHRs. But let me pause here and see if anybody disagrees.
So this is Sue.
I'm
stuck with really trying to understand the problem this is trying to solve. Can you give me some more color around what the intent of this is that we're trying to do? Is it when the parent is allowed to be the healthcare representative for a child until the age of X, in which case the child becomes the keeper of their information or the source of truth, or what are we trying to do here?
So I didn't go back to the original pediatric EHR format, but if I recall correctly, this is the issue about the emancipated minor, the change of custody, going into foster care. We already had the issue that we wanted to have the ability to identify these all the people that are involved in a child's care and seeking of health care, but this addresses the authority and the mechanisms to provide consent and access to the information. So I think that's what it addresses.
So Chris, this is Sam. I just wanted to interject, if it's okay, in looking over some of the discussion on this from the listening session, I do recall there was discussion to rename the priority to include the concepts expressed in priority 3, specifically identifying all guardians, caregivers, siblings, and caseworkers and their related roles and access rights, including emancipation of the patient. So I think, Sue, to your question regarding confusion, I recall some of it may have stemmed from the delineation in the title of the recommendation itself, if that's at all helpful. I just want to relay that historical information.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Sam. I was just pulling my slide back up from that listening session, and that's exactly what I had in mind as well.
So I noted somewhere that somebody wrote about current standards somewhere to indicate consent or authority or medical decision making, and I'm blanking on where I saw that. If somebody, because are we really just saying that we want to hook what we talked about before about multiple contacts, and then the EHR should be able to use, an already known nomenclature to tag those, mark those contacts in regards to their ability to consent or see information in the care of the child? Is that what we're talking about?
I'm sorry, can you ask that again, Sue? I missed your point.
Yeah, no, so I think somewhere I saw, and it was maybe it was on somebody's comments, that there already exists the standard, I don't know if it's HL7 or something else, about authority, about care authority, or am I making this up and it doesn't exist?
This is Al. There was a standard, and it may have been my comment, although it's not. So it's identifying the person, and this whether the person has a legal authority to access the records, or it's part of the care team, or it's just another relative. There are standards around there that can be used to designate who a person is. The ability to assign that person as an authorized access, whether it's for accessing record, making decisions, or accessing the portal, like the Purview download and transmit portal, those are separate than who the person is that's being granted that access. So I don't know. Does that sound like something that you were thinking about?
I'm just trying to figure out how do you operationalize this if we're asking EHRs to do it, right? We don't really want everybody to make this up their own way, because then when we transfer records, none of that goes with it. And so what I was looking for is that standard already defined, or do we need to request that there is a better standard to determine when we're sending data across, the care continuum of this means this is, has medical decision-making authority, this means has view authority, are those standards exist? And if not, can we point the EHR vendors to them? And if they don't, how do we accomplish that without that?
Yeah, and I think Sue, you brought up some very important distinction. So the way I look at it, and giving the case, for example, of a child that is in my newborn intensive care unit that has biological parents who want to give this child up, there's already a future adoptive family who is involved. You have the issue of who can obtain information about the child, who can learn about the medical information that we have collected, who can consent to procedures, who can be actually bringing this child, let's say, to a follow-up appointment. Even if I'm not consented yet to be the person who gives the permission for a surgery, I still might be entitled to bring this child for a regular child checkup to the pediatrician. So there's some nuance to this, and Al, it would be really helpful if at a later call we could dig into that a little bit, because making sure that whatever we choose for that is the right set of standards is going to be critical.
And EHR vendors do not want to get in the business of trying to keep up with state regulations.
Yeah,
I think
no way.
What we're asking is that the EHR empower the user to use what they know about state regulations to tag certain roles so that there is appropriate ability to make care decisions, view information, and ideally that information is tagged in a way that every EHR record recognizes, but when it goes from one place to another place, that care continuum and access is understood across all domains. Not we're making this up in silos.
Automate access authority based on every state and territory is a key point. There's to say. Everybody who's a parent has access, or everybody who's a parent of a 16-year-old or older doesn't have access. Those kinds of automated rules are going to be impossible to implement. But
that's right.
Say this person A has access, and person A is a grandparent, as opposed to then it changes to now this parent, this grandparent no longer has access because a parent does. Just to say who the relationship and the responsible party, and those are the terms that are used in those relationship standards that I mentioned in the past. And I think being able to capture the relationship and responsibility in to whomever you grant access based on local laws. I think that's a good thing to have. I don't know that we have any standards around the basis of the authority, to access, but who the person is and what kind of a relationship they are, I think would be key to capture. I think.
Yeah.
Kind of a minimum.
And we have that already in requirement 3. But I think Al, what I'm starting to hear around in this is that this nomenclature needs to be developed. Because the ultimately the rights that can be bestowed on you are the same. You know, they just might be differently regulated by different states and territories. But I think there is a great need to have a standard nomenclature that we can use and apply them based on state laws. And, you know, just to point out, because this is a, for pediatricians, this can be a challenging, a gnarly problem to deal with, especially in divorce situation where then one party claims the other has no access rights or, you know, et cetera. So this is a tough thing to manage. At least you want to have the nomenclature right.
Can I add 2 cents here? Just 1 second. I think everyone's on board with the philosophy of what we want to accomplish here, but this one is the one that I wondered about removing only because it's so broad and so vague right now with no great landing place or architecture that we can frame anything around, especially when the best we can say right now is, so that the physician can follow state laws, which we all think is a disaster because we don't even know what that means. In some earlier versions of the child model format, and certainly this was true all the way back to CCHIT, we sometimes ran into feature requests like this where it could be resolved by simply a text field, which is not the intent here, right? We don't want to say, all pediatric RRs, you're going to have a little box in the corner that describes who has access. The problem is, and Dr. Lima, you already gave some examples, there are about 25, I bet we could brainstorm right now, 25 or 50 different custody control access examples that are totally contradictory or have a different set of people involved or when this talks about needing a mechanism for access, now suddenly need a new button or a new switch to control it. I think this is really broad and really scary. And as Sue, I'll say it less politely than Sue, when you have broad and scary guidelines, the EHR vendors make really bad design choices. We see it all the time. And the problem I have with this one is I don't think we're even accurately describing what it is that the EHR can do and should do. That's all. I think this is a vital, vital, important a vitally important item. I don't even think our society knows what to do in many of these cases. I mean, that's you pointed out in these messy divorce cases, the computer can't solve the problem.
That's right. But at least the computer should be able to document what the condition is, right?
Yeah. Correct. But how do you do that without a text field? Because as Sue pointed out, we don't have a standard to point to that I'm aware of.
So let me think outside the box here, and I think there's 2 things. I would love there to be a standards nomenclature that we all agree on at some point that says this means I have medical decision making authority on behalf of the patient. This means I have emergency only privilege. This means I can view versus whatever. I don't know what those are. I don't think they exist, but I think they should. But in the short term and term, to do something and start the conversation. What I would love to see here is that we narrow this focus and say that the end user has the ability to make those decisions. The end user can mark each of those people with a specific privilege. And, you know, maybe we're going to make this up in weird places, but at least we start people thinking about it. Until we can come up with a standard nomenclature to overlay that. But in many places, it's the health system that's making the decision about the 13-year-old, and it's a special needs 13-year-old. And the bottom line is the end user should be able to say, yes, this mother just died, this grandmother has emergency, and switch it. The control needs to be at the end user, in my opinion, and get the EHR out of the business. And I'm not sure that exists in every EHR.
I hear you. And I'm thinking that maybe we can come up with a limited nomenclature, at least for the different rights that we have. you know, access to information, ability to add information, ability to make medical decisions, ability to take the child to the pediatrician. So those kind of things, I think we should be able to come up with something that at least would standardize this. So maybe there's, we'll do some huddling with the ONC staff later and see what kind of resources would there be available to either look into whether somebody has already described this or whether we could put some elbow grease into it and at least come up with a set of standards for that.
And I would do it in mind that this happens at the other end of life, right? So let's not build this for kids. Let's build this for anyone who needs a healthcare proxy, whether it's an adult who is not capable of making their own decisions or a geriatric patient. But let's make it broad enough that it makes sense.
And we call it a special beginnings and endings standard.
Okay.
Right, bad joke. Bad joke.
No. I was like, wow, would they let that happen? I didn't think you were joking.
Yes, I was joking.
One of the standards, if it's not listed on how to represent these, is the security assertion markup language or SAML. I don't know if that's listed.
And what was that assertion?
It's the security assertion markup language, or SAML. So it's a way to assert what you have access to and what the decision is to make that access.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a standard for representation. It doesn't solve our problem of, you know, what's the decision and what's the resource, but it is a standard way to represent those authorizations.
Would be nice to look at it and see if we can at least use that standard to build the things that we need. So that's a good suggestion. Thank you, Stephen.
But I think it's a good idea we may need to distinguish between access standards and the legal decision making standards, and whether or not, I think there's a question as to whether or not we can automate the legal decision making authorities as well as the sort of the record access authorities. I think those may be two separate things.
Well, actually, there's a supplement to this requirement that system shall provide the ability to record the patient's emancipated minor status. And that kind of implies that we really have here two things. We do have the access, and we do have the authority to consent issue as well. So I think this recommendation was to include both of them, and that's why we have that emancipated minor strapped onto that. So, all right. Clearly, we're not ready on this recommendation for prime time. I think we need to do some more research and some discussion about this, whether we can create ad hoc a limited standard that would be useful for this. So I suggest, unless there is any more discussion around this, that we move on to the next recommendation.
But can I just add one thing? Sue,
please.
This would be a really great thing to bring back to COCIT, because if the Academy, even without a technical standard, just had a best practices standard about how to track this information, we'd at least have a roadmap about for good design or good workflow. It doesn't even exist right now. And so
I
hope that makes
sense.
It
lends itself to a best practice paper. You're absolutely right, Chip.
Yep. Look, this could tag along on the privacy work that the subgroup is doing, because it's all part of the same thing. For figuring out how to do this, it's you have to figure out how to tag the information. They have to figure out how the right people get access to it. So it's just broadening the scope from inside the healthcare team to whatever roles other people play in the life of the child. So I'm taking notes.
Okay.
Chip, this is Sam. Would you, others are likely more familiar, so forgive my ignorance here, but would you be able to share an example of that type of best practices documentation that you were referring to, as it may be, there may be an existing example to look at?
No, I don't think there is one around this particular issue, but the AAP does write guidelines and best practices papers where they recommend that pediatrician do things in a certain way. And that's usually limited to how to treat a specific disease. You know, I just helped write a best practice guideline for iron deficiency anemia. But, but it can be also focus on things like interacting with an EHR. I think I just made a note. I think we'll have a call later today with a group that Chip was referencing, COCID, and I'll ask him if there's any appetite to actually work on that.
And this is Al. I'll also check. We have some privacy security folks here at ONC who can perhaps shed some light on what those terminology and process standards might be from the technical side.
Excellent. Good. All right. Any last words on recommendation 7? If not, then we'll move on to 8. Title of that is Associate Maternal Health Information and Demographics with Newborns. So this is a tricky one. This is one that is primarily, I think, targeted at the inpatient environment. The system shall provide the ability to associate identifying parent or guardian demographic information such as a relationship to the child's street address, telephone number, or email address for each individual child. When we looked at that in the EHR format, I remember that this also kind of implied that there is a mother-baby link in the EHR. A number of vendors already provide that provide inpatient EHR. It's quite simple to go from the child records to the maternal record and import significant information that could affect the health of a child, such as a group B strep status or information about the pregnancy that would be relevant to the child's care. And I'm just, this is, to me, this is less relevant to outpatient settings and more relevant to inpatient settings. But I'll just pause here and see how others perceive this.
Yeah, this only works for an EHR that has a maternal clinical record in it already. I mean, I don't know if Sue ever runs into this, but this is something PCC never deals with because the patients are the fundamental record holders. Not the record holders, but our databases are filled with patient records, and we're not really holding maternal clinical data except as it's recorded in the patient record. I think if you wanted to expand this, I don't know if this is a good idea or not, but if you wanted to bring this into the ambulatory space, you could talk about an ambulatory EHR receiving a maternal clinical record and absorbing it into the child clinical record.
That's an excellent suggestion. But let me ask Stephen, as a family practitioner, you take care of whole families, grandparents till the grandchild. Have you encountered EHRs that actually integrate family relationships well? So, for example, if you take a family history on one child, that it propagates that information to other children in the family?
It's kind of hit or miss. So some of it does where you can replicate it across. But most are all set up as kind of, as just was discussed, and you have the individual record for each individual patient. So the only other thing I was thinking about from the ambulatory standpoint is those instances where the birth is not at a hospital, but I think the is where going back to kind of the core of what's the minimum necessary for a pediatric, I don't think we have to worry too much about that case. I just wonder from an ambulatory standpoint, though, if it's just making sure that there's a set of fields for maternal data that's relevant for the patient, for the child.
So Stevie, just read my mind. I mean, I think the problem we're trying to solve here is that there are certain perinatal information that's important for the care of infants that is directly related to the mother's history. And so saying something like either providing a link to, in the case of a inpatient setting, or the ability to record perinatal or maternal information that is obviously not the child's information, right? So how do you put it inside the EHR that it is like you don't make a mistake and think it's the kid's groupy strep status? It's obvious it's the maternal's history as discrete information. I think gets to the spirit of what we're talking about. And that's not so prescriptive that people can't do it in a certain way. Now, I would love to make it so it's not just a blob text filled somewhere, but I don't know that we have the ability to say which elements should be discrete data or not, or if we just say some of which needs to be discrete data. I'm going to defer to the what is the possible versus what is ideal.
Well, actually,
maybe just one quick. I'm sorry, Chris. Just one quick friendly amendment to that. I think the inpatient record EHR needs to be able to have that stored in its record for the kiddo, because a lot of times the ambulatory is only going to be able to request or may just request the kid's record from the hospital if it's of a different pediatrician than the one that was taking care of them while they were at the hospital.
Yeah, so linked and pulled into a report about the infant, right?
Yeah.
Right, so because in some hospitals like mine, they don't even use the same EHR.
I think there is the Chip said something earlier that I very much liked. I liked his suggestion that this information should be available in a format that can be exported and digested by a pediatric EHR. That's the thing that I really liked because that makes a lot of sense. That then allows us also to If you have a standard format in which it is transmitted, you have a set of elements that will be granular and that will be that can be used for decision support downstream if you needed to. And that really opens up, and I'm just going to open up another can of worm, that also then leads me to think and I know a lot of pediatricians who will say emphatically yay to my question now, should the EHR also be able to digest the results of the state screening of newborns? And I feel very strongly about it, but I'm just going to put this to the group. The challenge there is that state screens vary from state to state and territory to territory. The types of tests for certain diseases vary as well, so there is no standardization there. So one state screen might include 26 items, another one 35, and they might choose different testing methodologies for an item that both test on. But I think this is really pertinent information that has a significant impact on well-being of children for diseases that actually can be acted upon. That's the beauty of the state screens. Those tests are for diseases where you can actually do something before the damage is done. So I'm just going to stop here and see how others feel about state screens.
Well, let me add to that. So if I follow along properly, one of the implications is that at every hospital around the country that sees newborn, that an ambulatory pediatrician is asking for files from, data from, they are going to receive potentially different levels of maternal information and state screening tools. And one of the points that we want to make is, so great, you're now part of care quality. Someone sends over the CCDA with the actual results in it or some other form, doesn't matter. What we want is the ambulatory pediatric tool to be able to receive as much valid data as possible and not throw out that important maternal data, those important screening results.
Yep.
Correct? And so it strikes me like, yeah, like I'm adding a corollary to your comment, which I think may be a better or stronger way of focusing very specifically on one button transfer of maternal information within the same EHR, because that's not to me, that doesn't even feel like a necessarily a pediatric thing.
This is Al from ONC. We actually had done for the question, for the question of transfer of maternal data, about a year or two ago, we had done an analysis of the state of the CCDA and its ability to really just hold information from a different patient. You know, in this particular case, it would be maternal data in the pediatric lab section, lab results section. And there really is no current capability for a CCDA to hold the model of the lab results section. There's not the ability to hold. There's not a section called maternal lab data or lab data or the lab data doesn't have the metadata of, you know, other person as a source. That would need to be if we're talking just about CCDA. That would have to be modified, and then there would have to be a way to import the maternal data in order before you compile the CCDA. There's also nowhere in the data model where it's a provenance question about does this what the source of the data is a different patient. It's a tricky thing in the lab data model. Doesn't really, the other results sections don't have that capability right now to say this is lab result, but not from this patient.
I'm a little perplexed. Do we never ever? There are other diseases where you get, for example, HLA subtypes of relatives to identify whether they're potential donors. So that concept exists in medicine, that you have lab data in a patient's chart that is critical, but it comes from somebody else.
The implication of what you said, and I should have thought through what I was saying better earlier, I'm sorry, is that the only circumstance in which this this feature is needed is when you're talking about when a patient and a child and a mother exist in the same EHR. Because as soon as you leave, you could be from hospital to hospital. It's not even an inpatient thing. You can be from, or just an outpatient ambulatory thing, from hospital A to hospital B. A patient transfers. If there's no place within the record to transfer maternal data with the child data, then the only data that's going to come over is the data that's already in the child record as being the child's data. So I was trying to broaden this, I guess, to say, boy, this would be really effective as a system-to-system conversation, but this is literally, what it really means is on one database, within one system, within one healthcare entity, we want to associate the maternal information with the child information, which seems very limited in scope to me.
Well, I think that the capability exists. It just doesn't come back as, it just like family health history is more of a, it's almost like a textual, it's text information. Family health, family history is not the same thing as lab result in format. And with that, so a pediatric record could contain that family health history of whatever, but usually that's not granular enough to represent GBS status or HLA typing or
or those kinds of things. When we the transfer from hospital to hospital or hospital to outpatient, that still happens, but the records are not integrated. For, you know, you can't, like the pediatric, the ambulatory EHR wouldn't be able to ingest maternal data. They would be able to ingest pediatric data that has maternal history in it.
Right. That, yeah. I know that's exactly right, and I think I agree with you wholly. And so, the only way that this would affect an EHR designer or developer would be when you're looking for maternal information that exists within your existing database. Now you have a maternal record sitting next to a patient record. It's not an example of, oh, we got maternal data from somewhere and we want to pull it into this patient record. It can only be, because a lot of these mechanisms don't work, it can only be data that is, I'm not articulating this well, but if you've got a patient record and there's maternal data in it that has been added, let's just say manually for right now, everyone presumes that data can be sent and received. It's not always true, but let's just presume that's the case. This is trying to say that you can associate information because that's not already done that way. It's done differently. SUSE system and PCC system, we've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, it's such an odd request for us. I'm trying to think of when we would ever even apply this. I hope that makes sense.
When you say we've been doing this, which this are you talking about?
Provide the ability to associate identifying parent or guardian demographic information. You know,
well,
I'm going straight
but not
from
necessarily
the fundamental.
We're talking more here. We're talking about, you know, maternal medical information that's actually part of, you know, the maternal record. So that's really
right. Yeah. No. Okay. So, and here's the thing: the as a rule, just using PCC as an example, this is a very, very narrow scope. PCC doesn't record any clinical information for the mothers as a rule. Any information that's applicable to the patient just gets added to the patient, okay? And so we could have mother's blood type, okay? I'm just making this up. And that is now part of the patient record. And what I was trying to read this originally, like how would this apply to us in the ambulatory space? And that was me saying, oh, if someone pointed out a maternal record that existed somewhere else and said, apply the appropriate clinical data from this maternal record to this child record. That's how I was looking at it. But it seems to me like this is always a matter. I was trying to make this always a matter of data coming from outside the system, applying to this to a patient record on the system I'm in. But really, this is about within your single Epic hospital implementation, connecting two patient records and sharing the appropriate data.
Yes, or transmitting the data. So that could be, you know, if you have recorded the history of the family history of one sibling, that you could share that with the other three kids that are in the office at the same time.
So Chris, that to me is different. And the scope of this, I believe, is, discrete capturing of maternal information. So it's obvious it's maternal information and not the patient information. I already have discrete fields, mother's blood type, you know, mother's HIV status, all that sort of stuff, gravida parida, all of that stuff as discrete fields. It has to be hand-entered because there's no way to sort of map that data because there's no standard for it, which I think eventually would be awesome. But I'm not even sure that every ambulatory EHR has the ability to record maternal information that's relevant to the kid as discrete information. And if we're going to start somewhere, we start somewhere. And I will tell you that the whole family history thing is a bigger conversation. OP clearly does this. We have what we call a social family. That's people who share the same address. A genetic family, that's like, and that can, we even have the its sperm donor mother as the genetic family, and we can link kids. And we do have, if you record it in one sibling's chart, if they share the same genetic parents, it's copied across all the other siblings' charts. So we do that. But we're, again, this is, you know, it's our core business and it's our value proposition. But I think that's a bigger chew and different than just taking the ability to record important. Now, I could go one step further and say, when the kid comes of age, how much of that maternal data are they allowed to see?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big
one. You know,
if
the mother was treated for an STI in her third trimester or herpes or whatever, is the 17-year-old allowed to see that about their mother when they're older? That's, to me, having it be able to record it as discrete data but segregated in release of information for privacy purposes is would be an ultimate awesome goal.
I wanted to interject something about my experience with certain EHRs. The ones that, in particular, the one I don't know that much. I don't know about Epic and how they map maternal to newborn data. I'm assuming that they do. However that's linked, the EHR that I used to use, which is in place in all the DOD inpatient facilities around the world, is that when a baby's born in a hospital, it's on the same system. When a baby is born in the hospital, it's create newborn record, which imports what we have designated to be the pertinent maternal data, including gestational age and labs and all that and other histories. So that does happen, at least in one case, probably in more that have, you know, an integrated inpatient record. The question is, how is that done? What's the data model behind the imported maternal data? Is it text field? Is it low-link data? Is it, you know, what is it? I don't know the answer to that question, and it probably, because there's no defined standard yet for how that happens, it probably is different in every EHR that does it. I'm just going out on a limb. But it does happen. That import maternal data does happen for inpatient records that does OB and newborn. It's just there's no standard behind it right now, I don't think.
All right, so this turned into a much more difficult discussion than I had hoped for, but it was actually a very good one. I think what I have heard is that there is a desire for some maternal information relevant to the health of the child, as well as potentially the newborn screen, to be able to be sent and digested by a pediatric EHR. At this point, there are no good standards that we are aware of how to do this, and there is clearly the need to do further work, but it is a functionality that is important to the well-being and the health of the child. I think we can leave it for the moment here, and we'll do some more work and see what there is in form of standards for the state screens and newborn screens, and what is there in form of existing transmission of that data. See if anybody has worked on this and found any solutions. Did I sum this up all right?
Hey, Chris, this is Al again. I wanted to make a comment on the state screen. The way that I believe that the standards exist in low-ink, whether or not every state screen has a low-ink panel code or not is a separate question. But state screens are labs, maybe run by a different lab, maybe a lab that's not required to use low-ink. But to order a state screen is to me a lab test that can be represented in Loewing, whether it currently.
I agree.
Is there.
You're absolutely right, Al. You're right on the money there. I agree.
Al, I also appreciate hearing you pronounce it Loewing, because here at PCC we say Loewing like Homer Simpson. So it took me a minute to understand what you were talking about.
Okay. I think, thank you. So,
I was like, oh, that's how you pronounce it. Okay, never mind.
So there's a bigger issue with the newborn screening I just want to say. I agree that it should be Loewing and absorbed in your lab feed, however you get it. The problem is that most of those screens go back to the place that did it, which is the hospital, right? And everybody has different ways of figuring out how you get the primary care follow-up person, because that's not even always known at the time of discharge. So there's a logistics issue. And I can't query somewhere to say, here's my patient born at this hospital, let me have that result. I got to go on a website and print out a list because I'm, you know, an authorized user in my office. And most state screening organizations that are collecting this data are not feeding it back to the PCP. So it's not just the ability to absorb it. It's like, I'm not even sure it gets to the right people at the right time. It's all going back to the birth hospital or the birth facility that drew it, at least in states that only have one. Now, there's clearly states that have two. And in those states, most of them, I do believe, because the physician orders them, the PCP orders them, it's coming them back to them as a lab result.
Yeah, so those are good points. But I think what I said earlier, Sue, was if somebody were to send you that information, you should be able to integrate it in your EHR.
Yeah.
So let's deal with that aspect that you can digest it, and then we'll bug ONC later about making people send it. One step at a time, that's how I would look at it.
That works for me.
All right, moving on. Anybody has any more parting words for this one? This was actually a head scratcher, I have to say. Another case of us recognizing what is important for child health and technology not quite ready for it yet. So quite interesting. All right, then we have. Let me do a check with the ONC staff. Do we have time to tackle the next one?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Recommendation 9 is the track incomplete preventive care opportunities. Now, this is a big one for pediatricians. I'm pretty sure it's a big one for family practitioners as well. The description is, the system shall generate a list on demand for any children who have missed recommended health supervision visits, preventive opportunities, according to frequency of visits recorded in Bright Futures. So this is very specific. It references an AAP product, the Bright Futures, which has a recommendation for screens that children should go through as they reach certain ages. So age 1, for example, includes a hemoglobin to identify children with anemia. There are a whole list of preventive opportunities. They go from screeners to immunizations and other interventions. So now, without being too critical, the Bright Futures in itself is and I think Sue and Chip will be able to speak to that. It's challenging to implement in an EHR, but it is clearly the bread and butter of pediatricians. And for anybody who deals with children, something that's critical to be able to do within the EHR. So I'm going to pause and let Sue and Chip tell us how they have managed to do that.
So let me just say that I applaud your wanting to put in all of the care plan items in Bright Futures, but I think that's not where we should go. I think that we should just start with the ability to recall and identify patients who are missing a well visit, period. And I'll tell you why. A lot of EHRs can do annual well visits, and they can tell you anybody who's been over 365. The devil is in the periodicity schedule that exists in the first 3 years of life. Is the child due or overdue for a 2, 4, 6, 9, 18 month, 12 month? That's where most EHR, ambulatory EHRs fall short, and that's where kids lose access to care. And I would vote for, and I will also tell you that taking care of lots of, talking to a lot of practices, even the practices think they're all special snowflakes and have reasons why they don't follow Bright Futures, including sometimes they don't align with the Medicaid regulations in their state. So I would argue not to do the granularity of what happens at those well visits and create care plans to individual items, but just let's start with the ability to identify well visits periodicity based on the Bright Futures schedule and create a recall for those care gaps, including the periodicity for children under 3 months, 3 years of age.
That seems a reasonable recommendation. I applaud. I mean, I have some issues with the decidability of Bright Futures and actionability of some of those recommendations, and they tend to be at a higher age. The lower ages are actually the ones that are better defined.
Okay, my two cents. I generally agree with Sue. I think that this is a two-pronged demand. When we say track, we want to be able to generate lists. I mean, that's right there from the child in model format. You want to be able to generate lists for recall purposes. I also think we want to be able to flag patients otherwise create an alert. And I realize that's opening Pandora's box, but I can tell you, because I've done this analysis, 20 to 25% of the kids who walk in a pediatric office every day are overdue for their well visit. And that's awful. You know, the average teen well visit coverage in this country is below 50%. And so I agree with Sue. Let's start with something that's really pretty, it's pretty simple. And it is, in fact, the all the other missing preventive care opportunities, whether it's screenings or immunizations or anything, those are all based on the kids actually coming in for a well visit. And so I do agree starting there. I just want to see something that says, you know, we've already got in this list, and certainly within other aspects of EHR certification requirement, we want some sort of alert or notification when patients fall outside our expected values. Well, I'd like to see the Bright Futures well visit schedule considered to be an expected value somehow. And so this kid has not been in 13 months, or this kid has not had a 6 month visit.
So Chip, I'm going to agree with you, and there is elegant ways to do this. What you're talking about is population management with the recall capability. Show me my list of kids who are overdue so I can work that list, but also the ability to alert the user at the point of care when they access the patient record that the patient is overdue for that well visit on the individual patient level, so that care gaps can be closed while the patient is in front of you. We do it by showing a date of a last well visit on the chart, and it's in red if the kid's overdue. The date's just in red. I mean, it doesn't have to be a pop-up. It can be alerted elegantly in a lot of different systems. But I think that's a really great point. The ability to do population recalls based on Bright Futures periodicity and alert the end user at the point of care when they access the patient record that patient is overdue for a service.
Yes, that's exactly.
That's no different than they do for mammo recalls, where everybody got good at that in the adult medicine. This is our version of that.
And Dr. Lehman, for the purpose of lining, you know, we didn't do very well on the previous two things we discussed today, but lining it up with some of the other CERT criteria, this is a big fastball down the middle, because there are a bunch of CQMs related to these things.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, some of them. Yeah, this is so there's my fastball down the middle. The CQMs that are already defined, including one that's actually in development on amblyopia screening, vision screening, are, you know, are electronically specified quality measurements, which then can be CQMs are after the fact, but the same logic parameters can be applied to use decision support, which is the point of care determination of meeting the needs. The heavy lift though is to identify and electronically specify those rules, which historically has been a fairly heavy lift per rule in order to implement something in a standard way.
Yeah, absolutely true.
Whether it's a quality measurement or it's a decision support or it's a combination of both, take a rule, take a clinical practice guideline, and make an electronically specified, ingestible, computable rule engine. So the standard is there, existing, published. We can certify to it, to the ability to compute and report on existing quality measurements. That's what ONC certifies to. What we don't do is we don't certify to rules that don't yet exist. But EHRs who certify to CQMs can ingest, can calculate and report on using the standard languages that we use for CQMs.
Your comment implies, or one implication of your comment, though, is, and Dr. Lehman, this is for you, one of the things that we may want to do at the academy level is take the periodicity schedule and actually do the work. I don't think it's that hard. It's certainly a fraction of the effort required for the immunization logic. And take the Bright Futures periodicity schedule and turn that into a computable standard that we can all adhere to.
Yeah.
I would love to be
preaching to the choir, and I'll have that discussion with you offline. I've been pushing on the Partnership for Policy Implementation to work on this for quite a while.
They get stuck on if the kid's late. What's the bounds of it? But we have to put a stake in the sand if we're going to advance this work. And now we have a reason to do it.
Yep.
And the good news is that the technical infrastructure is in place to support this. There's also some parameters, there's some precedents to doing some of the Bright Futures guidelines. They're already there, so they're already in place in some cases. So it's just a matter of like picking up the ball and running with it, as opposed to like figuring out where the game's going on.
I'm going to keep that one.
You can use it. I just made it up.
That was a good one.
As far it goes, as sports analogies go, yep. All right. Any additional discussion about this particular item? All right. If not, then I'm going back to my thing. What that means, we have reached the recommendation 10, and that is the recommendation called Flag Special Healthcare Needs. The description was, the system shall support the ability for providers to flag or unflag individuals with special healthcare needs and complex conditions who may benefit from care management, decision support, care planning, and shall support reporting. So this is the use case of flagging your kids that have asthma, your diabetics, kids with specific care coordination problems such as genetic diseases. And use that, and really what's implied here is, not only are you supposed to be able to flag it, you should be able to use it for decision support. So it is something that allows you then to either generate lists, invite people to the office, create health reminders, etc. So this is something that is going to be the basis for ongoing clinical decision support. All right, I'm going to pause here and see whether there are any thoughts or comments.
Chris, this is Al again. I think number 10, the requirements or the recommendations or requirements for number 10 from a technical standpoint are identical to recommendation number 9. These are the special health care needs of a 2, 4, 6 month old are, you know, at a base the same as special health care needs of some other population of kids. And so it's just a matter of defining that with a you know, a set of codes or and then applying rules about what you do with special health care needs. And so the same thing goes back to the special health care needs have to be defined, guidelines developed, and then decision support and quality measurement built around it, just like the one before.
So I think that, yeah. Go ahead.
So I read this differently. And in having done medical home now 3 iterations over 10 years, what I think there's individual populations, and most EHRs can be able to sort by individual patients that have X diagnosis and create evidence-based care plans around them. That was written in the LAF certification requirements. What is harder is there is no, quote, ICD or SNOMED code that says child with special health care needs. And some of us are trying to figure out what is our population, our overall population of kids with special health care needs, however you decide to define it. And people are struggling, especially when we start exchanging data, to identify. I would love to see that there's a SNOMED or an ICD or both, because some systems use one or other and the current mapping is not one-to-one, that there is a code that is a child with special health care needs. And the practice can decide what other subsets fall underneath that. But just identifying those kids for care coordination and knowing if I get data from CHIP system that says this is a kid that the last practice has said is a kid with special health care needs, I pay attention to it differently because there's not good evidence-based guidelines in an overarching way to currently decide what to do with those kids.
But is there any single status of special health care needs that defines a specific thing to do with a kid? It seems like that's too generic to say this kid is special or has special health care needs, rather than a list of special health care needs like diabetes, asthma, obesity, and those codes exist, and the dealing with each of them is different, I think.
So those new codes do exist, and most EHRs, because they had to do it for last certification, have the ability to use evidence-based guidelines, cite where they came from, et cetera. The problem is for pediatrics, it's not diabetes and whatever. It's I have a genetic 22q11 undiagnosed myopathy, those sort of squishy kids that don't fit in a – And there is no evidence-based guidelines to deal with all of these sort of more rare, but or it may even be that the kid's special health care need is that their parent is has mental health implications and they're at higher risk and need to be followed with a care coordinator or something. So, you know, I don't know where we want to go with this, but I sort of feel like some of this is already doable based on the last certification. What's not there is what is, you know, how do you determine who your kids with special health care needs are when you're dealing with 27 diagnoses, some of which are squishy and don't have a care plan other than I got to give this kid a care coordinator who gets to know the mom and can help them navigate the healthcare space.
So you're talking more of a generic flag.
Yeah. And the way I looked at it, Al, was also the ability to determine what it is you flag. You know, you might live, for example, in a community that has a great percentage of a certain type, a certain ethnic group of patients that have a higher prevalence of one particular disease. So you need to be, as a pediatrician, you need to be able to use that flag and adjust it to your practice's needs. That's how I perceive that. So it's a more generic ability to create these flags with and then the ability to build decision support on top of it.
And again, to be able to transmit that in a coded way that from system to system, people understand this is a child with special health care needs. And they may review the record and decide, according to my criteria, no, and, you know, retire that problemless item or whatever. But so what I hate is that in order to make this happen in a lot of systems to support identifying kids who need more intense care, there's one more checkbox, right? And checkbox to, from what my system to your system is meaningless. There has to be some sort of coded way to say this is an identified child with health care needs. And quite frankly, I think it belongs with I would hate it to be just a flag unless we can figure out there's an HL7 or something flag that we can map somewhere to do it.
Well, so what I can say is if there's not a code, and the research is fairly easy to figure out if there seems like there's an appropriate code in existence. If there's not one in existence, making one is not that difficult. A generic flag, if the industry agrees that a generic flag is appropriate, a generic flag code, ICD-10, SNOMED, both is fairly low lift to do. There's a well-defined process to introduce new codes.
Then let's make it happen. Chip, am I out of? Am I speaking crazy here, or how do you experience it?
No, I remember specifically these last two items appearing at the end of our meeting in October 2017 because we got into the end of the day and we had, I'm going to be obnoxiously biased here, we were looking at a series of inpatient hospital requests. And I said, wait a minute, how can we talk about having, Sue, you and I were both saying this, how can we talk about having a pediatric functionality that doesn't fundamentally, first of all, have any preventive care concepts in it and any sort of chronic disease management concepts in it, because the previous items really have very little of that. And so this, in a way, I don't care where we start on this, because Sue, your points are absolutely right. There's this is the tip of the iceberg. We don't want just a generic flag. And we want a lot more than that. We want standards for indicating this kid is diabetic, this kid is depressed, this kid is whatever. But in the absence of nothing, I want to start somewhere. So I haven't said anything yet because I'm like, in a way, I don't even care where we land. It is because it will be just the first step. And whatever we describe here, Sue and I, in fact, most EHRs have already been doing this for a long time. But putting a pediatric face on it, that will be the important part. I hope that makes sense.
All right. So this is ambitious, but I think it makes a lot of sense, and I think we have done it in a number of ways. Are there any other thoughts, any other comments to this? And I think, Al, just to go back to your point earlier, yes, I think this is also something that could be used for quality measures, at least for some of them, if they are associated with specific conditions. But so it wasn't completely out of the ballpark.
And then the other thing I would say is if there's, it sounds like I heard two different things. One is a generic code is okay, and one is maybe it's not ideal. But the alternative could be to, if a list of codable concepts can be generated which qualifies as special health care needs in general, then I know that just having diabetes doesn't necessarily make them the kiddo special health care needs kid, but it might in certain circumstances. But putting together just simply the value set of coding that incorporates this, and if member of this value set, then case management is a fairly straightforward rule to implement.
So can I get really bold now and say it would be awesome if we had child with special health care needs and their subcodes? One is physical needs, one is social determinants of health, which can put kids in the special health care needs, and one is mental health needs. That would be fabulous.
I think finding that what you're describing is generally held within the ICD-10 Z codes. There's either a reasonably appropriate spot for them or reasonably appropriate room for them that can be developed. And I'll do a little bit of research and poke around and see where there's some kind of reasonable spot for developing such a code.
Thank you.
And I would just second Sue the implication of something Sue just raised, which is to have a top 10 pediatric features, we would be remiss to not somehow pull the concept of the growing mental health crisis with kids into it, because it is the tidal wave that's hitting all the practices right now. So even if that's not, you know, she's not trying to solve the mental health crisis with this one little sub comment, but being able just to say, hey, if you're pediatric, you're going to need to start to track these kinds of things. I think that's a great first easy step.
And one more thing, if we're really going to get to value-based payment for kids, this is, we know, probably half of their risk, and it is currently not at all being calculated by payers in risk adjustment coding. We know, you know, your mental health of your parent. And so, for example, if you look at the SNOMED ICD code sets, we get stuck with, it's really the mental health of the parents that's making the kids special child health needs, but does it belong on you don't want to put the mom's diagnosis on the kid's problem list, and there is no code set for parent with, right? So when you look at those code sets, please do so with that in mind.
Got it.
So this is probably a good time to just take a quick break for public comment before we wrap up today's discussion. Operator, can you please open the public line?
Yes, thank you. To make a comment, public comment today, please press *1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press *2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
No comments at this time.
Okay. I will hand it back to our co-chairs to wrap up the discussion for today.
Well, I think we have done quite a bit of work today. Managed to go through 4 recommendations. I am at this point very appreciative of all the comments and the discussion. I think there's a lot of work that we identified for ONC to go back and do some research on and identify potential ways of solving this. And I am very grateful and appreciative for everybody on the call today, and I'm going to turn it back to Carolyn.
Thanks, Chris. I want to second Chris's comments about all the great work that was done today. I feel like you really teased out a lot of important issues and things that are perhaps not immediately apparent to people who are pretty involved in developing EHRs, which is wonderful. I did want to touch on one comment that I heard in the discussion earlier. Someone said that they felt we hadn't done very well on the first 2 guidelines. To the contrary, I think you have done a tremendous job, in particular with some of the very challenging discussions we've had today.
That was me. I'm sorry. I only meant I glossed over the step of tying it back to other things. That's all.
From the HITECH perspective, what is really beneficial for us is getting all of these things surfaced and on the list of considerations and things that ONC needs to think about and perhaps things that developers need to start thinking about in their work. And so it's it's not a problem if we don't just kind of talk about things and agree and say, yeah, we'll keep it, you know, it's all good. The value is in pulling all these things out and finding the deviations from sort of where we thought we were 3 or 4 years ago. So I believe the whole HITECH will be very, very appreciative, even when we're not agreeing or just, you know, rubber stamping what's in front of us. So please carry on.
Thank you for that comment. I'm a full believer that if everyone at the table agrees with each other, we've just invited the wrong people to the table, and we're all just adding to our affirmation bias without having richer discussion. So thank you for pointing that out.
Well, thank you for all your hard work. And I will now turn it back to Lauren. Do we have anything else?
Nope, that's it. Nothing else for me. Thank you, Carolyn. And I think we have our next next meeting on the books.
So this is Sam, and I don't know if Steph has anything to add. I just wanted to take about 30 seconds for process, if that's okay. So for our next call, just taking a few moments perhaps to the extent that any members of the task force identify any of the supplementals that they would recommend removal of as a correlated item to the larger recommendation, that would be helpful to identify. I believe in our first call, Chip, you had identified supplemental number 2 to recommendation number 2. If there are other examples, we just want to circle back and identify those as a group. And then additionally, if there are any correlated existing or proposed criteria that should be removed, we can identify them as well. I don't think this will take very long. It seems as though there is consensus from today's discussion to retain all 10 of the ONC recommendations as well. So I just wanted to offer that.
I think that's my impression from the discussion thus far as well.
Agreed.
Thank you. And we additionally, on the last call, there were some clarifying questions for ONC on DS4P. And Al, we do not have time today, but we are prepared to respond to those. And then that obviously will be helpful as we dive into a focused DS4P discussion regarding the larger proposal in the rule outside of the care continuum section of the MPRM that is scoped to the task force charge as well. Steph, did you have anything to add in terms of work plans or future calls to share with folks at this time?
No, I think you covered it all. Thanks, Sam.
And I just want to thank Stephanie again for taking notes while we do this. It's a hard task, and she's done a tremendous job, and we're very appreciative. Thanks, Steph. And Steph, in keeping with what we've done following other meetings, as I understand, we will make this available to members via Google Docs so that they can review and refine accordingly. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. It'll always be available online.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, have a wonderful weekend. Thank you all so much for the rich discussion and your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.